All right, you're listening to another episode of the CTO Advisor. This is a pleasure. Two people that I've been wanting to get on the podcast for a long time. It might get a little geeky, so I apologize. The CTO Advisor may get, this is a podcast that indulges my own interest and is for my benefit. We have Bruce Davey and Larry Peterson from Systems Approach. They're the co-founders. If you don't know who they are, we could look them up on Wikipedia. We're just going to jump into it. I don't have a lot of time with these two visionaries, and we're just going to jump right into the conversation. So, guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. So, for those who haven't followed me, I was a huge fan of the concept of programmable ASICs. The ability to take, whether it was cryptographic or new protocols or some capability, and put it to the top of rack switch. So, if anyone ever accused me of being an Intel fanboy, this would be a great example of that, where you can from CPU to NIC onboard, smart NIC to top of rack switch, you could do some amazing thing at the network. You know, the whole network is the computer thing. And a few years ago, was it Barefoot that championed P4? Help me out with my history here.
Yeah, I mean, Barefoot, the people involved in Barefoot were also the people involved in P4. They realized you're going to have merchant silicon that's programmable. You're also going to need a programming language. It's a little broader than just the Barefoot folks. But yeah, they were Nick McEwen in particular was certainly one of the key early P4 people.
And they, were one of the first ones to try to productize P4 as a... And for those of us that, again, need a refresh, I guess we can start out with the basics. What is P4?
I mean, I'll maybe have a crack at that. I think of P4 as it's a programming language for specifying the behavior of programmable forwarding pipelines. And so, you can say switching hardware has often been pretty fixed function up until maybe 10 years ago. And then with the whole SDN movement, there started to be this movement towards making switches that were more programmable than what we'd seen in the past. And there was this insight that switches have a particular kind of operational paradigm, which is, you match on some fields in the header, and then you maybe do some modifications to the header, you make some decisions, and then you forward the packet. And that sort of match action paradigm was actually first probably codified with something like OpenFlow, and then P4 was this new way of looking at it, where you could say, here's a language which is really optimized for this kind of forwarding pipeline, and we can now specify how the forwarding pipeline operates. And with that, we give ourselves the opportunity to make switches where you can dynamically change the behavior of a switch in a rather more rich way than had ever been possible previously.
So my audience may, if they've not heard of P4 before, if not heard this capability, they might think, you know what? Everything is software defined and software enabled, and this is all happening at the basically at the CPU now. We have DPK, we have all of this on all of the advantages at the CPU. Help my mainly kind of cloud audience understand the importance of that at scale.
Well, yeah, I mean, people have been building switching functions and IP routers out of general purpose processors forever, since the beginning of the internet. And you can do a pretty good job of that. And a lot of sort of middle range class switches are actually just CPUs forwarding, reading off one NIC and forwarding out another NIC, and the forwarding code's all written in a language like C and running on a general purpose processor. But if you're going to be switching packets at tens of terabits a second, then you need to kind of be really good at it. And so the idea of P4, it's restricted. It looks a little bit like C, but it's a restricted language, and it's been tuned so that you specify what you have to do with with inline speeds to forward packets that are coming in onto an output port. So the hardware specialized. It's a domain specific piece of hardware. I like to think of this packet forwarding hardware as the network version of a GPU. GPU optimized for graphics. The packet forwarding pipelines are optimized for packet forwarding. Tensor processors optimized and for AI. So it's a very targeted piece of hardware, and you needed a very limited language for it because you had to be able to get your job done, your task completed within whatever time you had to forward that packet at tens of terabits a second.
Well, a world in which we describe this process similar to GPUs versus the other way around, the world has really flipped on me.
It has.
The acronyms. So from a product perspective, why is this important? Because we've had ASICs forever, and the advantage of of vendor specific hardware has always been the ability to move packets as fast as possible beyond general purpose CPUs. What specifically is P4 and similar languages or approaches enabling product creators or even some of the open networking folks to do?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I'd maybe give an analogy from my time at Cisco, where we built a lot of routers, as you can imagine, and we always had two choices. You could either make them fast or you could make them flexible. And there was actually a series of line cards that we built for one of the big service provider class routers. And it was like alternate versions would either be fast or flexible. And so, we'd do a really good job of making a flexible line card that would be based around some kind of traditional CPU, but it wouldn't be all that fast. And then we'd take that and put it into an ASIC. So the next generation would be faster, but it wouldn't be very flexible. And then we'd go and, things would get a little bit faster with CPU processing. So we'd do a next generation that was flexible again. And we'd do this kind of staircase of getting a little bit faster and then a little bit more flexible and then a little bit faster. But you never could do both at the same time. And this is what P4 basically does. And Nick McEwen kind of did an amazing job of explaining this, that if you just sort of say, I want to do the best job I can of processing packets in something like an x86 CPU, you're going to be in the kind of, maybe tens of gigabits range. And that's these days considered pretty good if you can forward tens of gigabits through an x86. Whereas with something like the Tofino chip that came out of Barefoot, it is tens of terabits. So, three orders of magnitude more, but still flexible. So that's the key thing. It's like we've never before had this ability to be both really fast and truly programmable, and this ability to be programmable now means you open up a whole lot of innovation. And that's kind of what's the value to the customer. It's like I get to be innovative without having to go and sort of dawdle along at a fraction of the speed of an ASIC.
Yeah, so from a practical perspective, I've run into this problem throughout my career. I'll invest in a platform, and then video streaming will come along, and either I'm moving from multicast to unicast, and I have to just move way more packets than I ever thought I'd have to move, and I just can't. The stuff falls over, and I can't replace my equipment fast enough to meet the demand and get the new platforms in place that have video specific encoding or transmission, whether we're talking about the network or we're talking about accelerators on CPU, et cetera. I couldn't outrun tech deck faster than the software would have evolved. So P4 is an attempt to answer that problem, at least at the network, correct?
Yeah, and I think it's like, good examples would be if you look at what some of the, what some of the big hyperscalers are doing now with programmable network infrastructure, they're able to, really customize the network behavior for things that are specific to their environment. And I don't know, Larry, you might have like a concrete example. I know we've seen, for example, Google talking about having programmability in their NICs, or, you know, in what they're calling these IPUs or DPUs, as an example where it's giving them the opportunity to be more innovative.
Right. So the adoption of this kind of capability in the hyperscalers is where it is happening first. And Google being able to customize for the workloads they understand very deeply is of course the whole idea here. But just to kind of generalize that statement, the importance of being able to tell your switch what to do in software with P4 means I can now, as an enterprise or as an owner of a network, I now am able to look at that specification. So, imagine having to look at a spec sheet for, go back to Bruce's example of a Cisco router. What exactly is it doing? Well, it's whatever those words said, but now you have the ability to specify, either you're specifying, or at least you can verify that someone else specified exactly the behavior of that switch, because the specification is written in a programming language, and that programming language is compiled down to the hardware. There's a lot of effort going in right now to the verification of what the P4 program is doing, what the P4 compiler is doing. So that as the owner of that network, whether I'm Google or an enterprise, I now know exactly what that network's doing. And in fact, one of the things I can program into the switch, because it's programmable, is the ability to observe what it's doing. So it's self-observing as well. And the hope is eventually you can close that loop where I specified what it's doing, I'm observing what it's doing, I now know that it's doing what I told it to do. And that's a huge step forward for the network.
And for those of us from the compute world, we might be scratching our heads thinking, wait, but we have this capability already in the compute, but you've already laid out the comparison in speeds and feeds and what I'm able to do top of rack and at the switch versus what I can do at the CPU. And to kind of drive home this point, when I look at a switch, to your example, when I look at a switch, I don't know if the specification means that I can have 500 VXLAN tunnels or and transfer rates at whatever, or do whatever type of packet inspection that I need. I don't know what the specs allow me to do in my environment. If I want to deploy this switch specifically to do data traffic and do some type of iSCSI offload, I know that this, with these P4 specifications, I can actually get that level of performance for my application, similar to what the hyperscalers are doing. I don't think most of my peers really grok. I mean, when I say my peers, I mean the other architects within the enterprise really grok how important this is as we try to alleviate the burden on general purpose CPUs, just like we do with GPUs. It has the potential to change our network performance in similar ways around data transfers and data, and thus increasing the ability to get answers faster from super large data sets. So this is where, you know, kind of my sensibility in the technology ends, and I start to kind of dream of what it possibly can do, and you two can ring me in and say, Keith, here's where the technology is actually at. So, Bruce, you've spent some time at VMware. So in my mind, like, I'm outsourcing everything that NSX does to the SmartNIC and the top-of-rack switch, and I can distribute security across my entire data center without using as little or no CPU as possible, and that's dedicated. And all of that is predicated on my ability to run P4 on the NIC and the top-of-rack switch, and VMware and folks like VMware have done the smart things to make that possible for me. That's the dream.
Yeah, I think that dream is very close to being reality. and I won't speak for VMware anymore, but I think this is almost exactly the use case that we're seeing coming with the DPUs and IPUs that we're seeing come out from, you know, most of the big silicon manufacturers now have got programmable either, you know, DPUs, data processing units, or IPUs, infrastructure processing units, which are in many cases P4 programmable. And the key thing here is that the virtual switch, which is integral to something like NSX, is a very flexible switch that's traditionally programmed in software and runs on a one or more x86 cores. And, you know, a lot of people have kind of recognized that's taking away processing power that would have been used for actual useful work, you know, in the sense of it would have been doing application code. Now it's just doing networking. And if you can now take that and move it onto a piece of hardware that's more optimized for doing networking, i.e. a SmartNIC, a DPU, an IPU, now you've got a performance advantage, but you've also got an isolation advantage. And I think this is something that's really critical, that, you know, when we run some security capability in the virtual switch, it's there specifically to protect the guest workloads from attacks coming across the network. And having this really clean separation between where you run the security functionality and where you run the application code is very powerful. So, you know, we've kind of up to this point emphasized the performance and flexibility of P4, but there's also this thing that now we can actually move the security function completely out of the server onto a processor that is in a completely different protection domain. And that is where we run the security functions. And so that's another significant step forward.
Yeah, and just to take that one step further, it's now under the control of a software-defined control platform. It's not that SmartNIC IPU isn't within the domain of the host operating system, probably where it ends up. So centrally managed specification of the policy then gets pushed out to all of these SmartNICs, or the switches obviously as well, is an element of that. Take all the infrastructure away from the processor. It's running isolated guest workloads.
So we only have 20 minutes, and there's so many different ways I can go with this conversation. And I think I'm going to make it as practical as I can for my audience. As we're looking at architectures over the next 2 to 5 years, what type of considerations should we be making for that control to be able to enable that control plane? Like the bits are not there yet. VMware's Project Monterey isn't out. IPUs are kind of bifurcated. The market is kind of just all over the place. Not everyone has decided that they're going to do IPU control plane management the same way. What are some of the things I should think about, kind of big picture and short term?
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, I think everybody should be doing network virtualization. And, you know, maybe I've got a particular, you know, horse in that race, but or I used to anyway. But I think, like, that's just kind of just a best practice. And so that's at least the stepping stone to some of the things we've talked about. Whether or not you've got programmable hardware, you should have this ability to run virtual networks that are, you know, software defined, controlled centrally, and let you have that, you know, higher level of control over your network functionality. The next thing I would say is it is still early days for commodity enterprise switches to become programmable. And so if you today were to say, I really, really want to have a P4 programmable switch, you could certainly go to one of your favorite vendors and get that, but you would be somewhat outside of the mainstream. And I think the question maybe, an enterprise architect would ask is, well, how important is it to me that my switch is more flexible than the average? Do I see a compelling advantage for me in being more flexible than my competitors? And, you know, for companies like Google or Amazon, it's a no-brainer for them to say that's a competitive differentiator. For other more traditional enterprises, it's maybe a bit less obvious. And I think that's the key question is, do I need that flexibility? And, you know, look at some of the particular use cases, like telemetry is one of the big early use cases that P4 is enabling. Would I like to have better telemetry than I get off the shelf? Well, that's something I can get with P4. So I think those would be the kind of questions I'd be asking. I think it would be premature to say everybody should just jump on the P4 bandwagon, but looking at some of those capabilities would be where I'd start today.
Yeah. I think Bruce nailed it, but just listening to him, it occurs to me that if I were looking to where I might see activity next at the enterprise level, it might very well be financial institutions. They have a lot of very tight, strict timing requirements, and so that would be certainly one possibility. The other thing on the horizon is, of course, automated manufacturing and IoT, and so we might. I think it might be those new sorts of applications as they become more prevalent in manufacturing and therefore in enterprises, that's what's probably going to drive the adoption of programmable hardware in the network.
Yeah, I think you two offer some really valuable insight. One, get ready for the model. You can't wait until the technology is mature and deployed from a industry standard perspective. You have to get the operating model correct. We've learned this now with containers and Kubernetes. If you hadn't prepared your team for microservices and managing a application stack in a cloud-like manner, if you waited for Kubernetes to become mature, you waited too late. You waited for the implementation detail to happen, and your staff wasn't ready to deploy it in whatever it came. It could have been Mesosphere. It could have been Kubernetes. It could have been Docker. That really didn't matter. If you missed the boat on the cloud native transition, waiting for the technology to matures a little bit too late. And then just getting in that mindset of understanding where is the differentiation and where's the problem? Where do I have this terabit data transfer problem at? Is it going to be at the edge in IoT, or is it going to be at the data center? And what do I need flexibility? So other than Googling you to find out your history and how much you've contributed to the discipline of networking, how can people find Systems Approach?
Yeah, so our main website is systemsapproach.org. And if you go there, you can find our bios, but also links to all our books. One of the major things we do these days is we're producing these open source textbooks. So there's one on software-defined networking, which has a lot of information on P4. So that'd be a good place for people to go. It's called Software-Defined Networks, A Systems Approach. And then we have a newsletter on Substack. So it's systemsapproach.substack.com. That's another great place. And from there, you can find our biweekly thoughts on networking and other systems topics. And that links through to some of the books we're doing. And all of our books are freely available online, that we've made that a mission to publish everything that we can on the web so people can just find it and go educate themselves.
Larry, Bruce, I really appreciate you two stopping by. Two extremely busy men, and this has been, again, a passion topic for me. I love networking. I'm not as deep as I used to be, but it's such a critical part of enabling cloud native and cloud capabilities. We can't ignore it. We have to move the discipline forward. For those of you who want to find out more about me, I can be found on the web. TheCTOAdvisor.com is the website. You can find more great content. If you have questions for me around this topic or anything else, DMs are open on Twitter @CTO Advisor. Talk to you next CTO Advisor podcast.